Tim Bresolotti is director of the Western New England University Poll. He's a pollster, and he is also professor of political science at Western New England University. Tim, we're always proud to have you with us and to tell us what's going on in the state where you work and I live. So let me start by asking you about tax overhaul. If you tell people you're going to get a tax cut, who's going to be against it?
That's right. That's right. It's true. And yet, trying to quantify what that tax cut is across individuals is the toughest selling point for tax overhaul. And that's why it hasn't occurred since 1986, that and the complexity of the tax code. But there isn't even an actual bill yet, but the general contours of tax reform as they've been presented so far are that the corporate tax rate would come down significantly from 35% down to 20%. The personal income tax schedule would shrink in terms of the tax brackets, and the standard deduction for families would double. Now, many families might benefit from that, but there are some other tax deductions on the table that are somewhat problematic. One, and this is a popular deduction in places like New York, New Jersey, and California, where there are high property taxes, is the deduction of your state and local taxes from your federal tax return. The initial draft of the tax reform package did away with that deduction, and Republican members of Congress from those high tax states said, we're going to have a really tough time getting behind that because that is something that our middle class families rely on in terms of their taxes and their tax refund. So we've seen Republicans kind of back away from it a little bit and say, well, we're only going to revoke that deduction for high income earners. But that's potentially a third rail of this bill. Another, of course, will be the deficit. Now, the Republican Party had in the past has been the party of fiscal discipline, and yet prominent Republicans in the past have also said, in the words of former Vice President Cheney, deficits don't matter. Well, this tax reform legislation would lead to a real ballooning of the federal deficit. It's unclear to me whether the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives, that's about three dozen very conservative Republicans who were brought in on the Tea Party wave in 2010 and beyond, it's unclear to me whether they would go along with a piece of legislation that would blow that big a hole in the budget deficit.
You know, to me, the idea that everybody's all over the place has got to be very difficult for you as a pollster or other pollsters to sort of get on board with. I mean, for example, we have Mr. Ryan saying one thing. We have the president saying another thing. We have the president saying two things, and nobody knows what's real.
Well, and this is something that the Washington Press Corps has begun to pick up on in the tax reform debate. They're drawing from the experience in health care reform, where President Trump championed a bill that made it through the House of Representatives to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, but then some weeks later said, no, that was a mean bill and we need to do better. Yeah. I think proponents of tax reform are saying to the White House, there's got to be some message discipline here if we're to get this legislation through. The president can't step in and undercut things at critical moments in the debate. Otherwise, nothing will get done. And I think the White House staff would appeal to the president and say, this could be your landmark achievement for your first year in office. You've just got to sit tight. Whether that would sink in is anybody's guess.
And then, of course, you have the specter of the Democrats not really talking in such a way that they're providing leadership to their troops. Or am I misassessing that?
I don't think you're misassessing it at all. I think Democrats want to see tax relief for middle-class families. So in some ways, when you talk about doubling the standard deduction from $12,000 to $24,000, there are middle-class families who are going to benefit from that. And so how do you position yourself on this bill? To date, the Democrats have said, well, the vast amount of the benefits of this bill is going to accrue to the highest income not necessarily even earners, the folks in the highest income brackets.
And yet, I'm sorry to interrupt, and yet you have Speaker Ryan coming out now and saying, got to have that fourth bracket so that rich people can't run away with the store.
Yes. Yes, so everyone is calibrating the message at this point, and tax reform is complex and it's messy. So summing something up in a simple sentence or two or slogan or frame for the average voter is a big challenge here. So far, the Democrats are going with, well, this tilts significantly toward the wealthy and will exacerbate income inequality. And yet we are an aspirational country. That sort of resentment of the rich that Democrats preach doesn't always resonate with working class people, because everyone aspires to someday be in that strata.
That's how the lottery exists. Everybody thinks they're going to win, and that's why so many people invest in it. Okay, yeah. Even though they won't. I want to ask you about the chances now for the Democrats to retake the House and Senate in 2018. I got 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. So, the House, the Democrats have to flip 24 seats in order to get to the magic number of 218 regain the majority. It's more and more feasible that they could do that. They enjoy a significant fundraising advantage right now. They're recruiting a lot of interesting candidates. There are districts that Hillary Clinton carried in 2016 that currently have Republicans representing them. The district lines, though, are always the challenge. Everything is going to have to fall into place. You've got to draw a straight flush here in order to pull this off. The Senate is a lot harder. Even though it's 52-48 Republicans, the Democrats are defending 25 seats in the next cycle. The Republicans are defending 8. So the Democrats just have to try to hold on to what they've got and then hope they can flip a couple of seats in states that have been trending sort of purple to blue, or where the incumbent might be problematic, or where the nominee is beyond the pale, is someone who's taken out the incumbents, sort of a renegade Republican. Again, a lot of things would have to fall into place for the Democrats to take the Senate.
I guess I want to talk to you now, if I may, about Steve Bannon. Here's this guy, he's throwing bombs all over the place, Molotov cocktails, at least political ones. And the question is, how much influence does he really have?
Well, let's take a look at the special Senate election in Alabama. The party's choice to win the rest of the term that had for the seat that Jeff Sessions had held before he became attorney general, the party's choice, Luther Strange, could not win the Republican nomination for the remainder of the term. He was an appointee backed by Mitch McConnell, backed by Donald Trump. Instead, Roy Moore, the former Chief Justice of the Alabama State Supreme Court, who had been removed from office twice. Won the nomination handily with support from Breitbart, with support from Steve Bannon. Now that race is in single digits. Some polls even have it a 1-point race. So if Bannon succeeds in pushing a lot of renegade candidates to take out safe Republican incumbents, we may not see many seats flip, but we're going to have to see the Republican Party spend money defending seats they never imagined they'd have to defend. And we're seeing that right now in this special election in Alabama.
It's great to talk to our friend Tim Versalotti, Professor Tim Versalotti, director of the Western New England University Poll. He's a pollster and professor of political science. Tim, always wonderful to have you with us. You are a great source of inspiration that somebody, anybody, can know as much as you do. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.